This is Oklahoma Perspective. Even before COVID-19 became a worldwide pandemic, the price of oil had begun to fall. As the coronavirus continued to affect countries around the world, the downward pressure on oil continued. Recently, KRMG's Russell Mills talked to Tom Singh, a professor at the University of Tulsa and an expert on oil and gas production. Singh explains where the oil and gas market is now and what we can expect in the near future.
You are an associate professor of, I want to say, petroleum business. Is that, I mean, that's not exactly
well,
right.
Well, just, yeah, that's okay. No. I'm assistant professor of energy business. It is more encompassing than just the oil and gas. And then I'm the director of the School of Energy over here at TU.
Perfect. All right. Hey, listen, thanks for getting back to me. I can only imagine that the wheels have come off the bus a little bit in the energy sector today, and that there is lots of conversation going on in your world about what happened and why. So, I mean, condense it for us, but kind of explain to us what's going on. This was partially because of coronavirus or COVID-19, but there were some precursors.
Yeah, I think to use your analogy, unfortunately, the bus is sitting on four cinder blocks. I mean, this is not good. If we drop back and we talk about entering into 2020, this is pre-coronavirus, the industry was already oversupplied, and we saw signs of some weakening demand. Now, part of that was, in fact, because you had a trade war going on between U.S. and China, and so demand in China was slacking off. So, again, basically, take a situation that the global economy was not growing at a rate that everyone had thought it should be growing at, and so demand for oil was already somewhat waning. Then you come basically to the United States, and you had essentially investors who are now saying to the oil and gas sector, look, you know, it's fine that you're out drilling for oil, but we want to see return on our investment. And then they started using phrases like free cash flow. You know, and if you look at any of the earnings statements, the year-end earnings statements coming out of a lot of the oil and gas companies, they were trying to emphasize free cash flow. You know, either we have it, here's how much it is, or here's what we expect our free cash flow to look like in 2020. So we already had an oversupply situation and somewhat of a waning demand situation globally. So then the coronavirus comes. And of course, initially, this was all fear-induced. You know, what could it look like? What's going to happen? And everybody kept going back to the SARS virus of 2003. And there was a substantial economic impact globally. In fact, there were estimates that China's GDP growth that year dropped as much as 1%. China's the world's largest consumer of oil. So initially, it was fear-driven. Unfortunately, then, as we've seen, it started to be reinforced with actual events. China closing down factories. China has supposedly cut their oil imports by 3 million barrels a day. Now, this comes at a time when production is stable and you lose 3 million. That's about 3% global demand right there. So these things were already happening. I mean, we know, right? There's been flights canceled. So things like jet fuel are going to be backing off in terms of demand. It's not the driving season in the United States. We're in a low gasoline demand period. So we had a weak supply-demand situation already. And because of, you know, what continues to be almost daily, I mean, the coronavirus, up until this incident with the Saudis and the Russians, I mean, coronavirus has been the word. I mean, you could put a newspaper out, just put coronavirus as a headline. It's explaining everything, both from an economic standpoint and an energy standpoint, every single day. So the Saudis, again, as OPEC, were looking for some type of solution last week. And we talk about OPEC Plus because for a good year and a half now, there's been an agreement that Russia and some small oil exporters aligned with Russia would go along with whatever OPEC said. So we've been referring to them as the OPEC Plus group. So essentially, you know, the Saudis, that group about a year and a half ago cut oil production by about 1.5 million barrels in total of exports. So the Saudis last week had really quickly put together what they call a technical meeting, and their solution was that OPEC would cut back an additional 1 million barrels a day of output, but they were looking for Russia and those other countries affiliated with Russia, the so-called plus group, to cut about 0.5 million a day. So the thing that nobody saw coming was that Russia basically said, no, we're not going to do that. We can basically be economically viable at lower prices. Actually, they said at current levels, which last week, those levels were in the 45 to 50 range. And so Putin basically said, you know, their economy doesn't rely as much on oil as they used to. I tend to think that's BS, because it wasn't that many years ago that the ruble was just getting powdered because of lower oil prices, which led Russia to join in with OPEC and talk about controlling output. In any event, that's the statement that, he made. And the Saudis said, fine, we're going to go ahead and lower our price of oil to Asia, specifically China. So they dropped their price about $8 a barrel for oil they're exporting to Asia. And then the Russians talked about boosting their output back to the pre-output curtailment levels. The Saudis have said they're going to go up to, you know, maybe 11 million barrels a day. So, you know, immediately you already had a situation where global demand was, in fact, being cut back. As I said, China sort of the most obvious one, a 3 million barrel a day cutback in the importation of crude oil. And then you ramp up supplies from the number two and number three crude oil producers in the world. So what we got essentially was truly just a bloodbath. The way that the futures markets work, there is an electronic trading platform that the New York Mercantile Exchange has that's called Globex. So you can actually start trading energy futures on Sunday evening at 5 p.m. Central Time. And we saw this back in January on the 6th when there were the reports that there were missiles flying from Iran over into Iraq. Those had happened on a Saturday. The market didn't open until Sunday, again, as I mentioned, at 5 p.m. So immediately we saw a $6 per barrel jump in the price of oil, because the assumption was that somehow that conflict was going to lead to an interruption of oil supply coming out of that area. Well, it didn't materialize, and prices had kind of fallen off since then. Well, we saw the opposite thing happen last night. Literally the opening trades last evening when the electronic trading platform started were $9 down from where we were Friday afternoon. Friday afternoon's closing price was about $41.30 for West Texas Intermediate crude oil. And they had some trades that were around $32 last night at 5 o'clock. We got as low as $27.34 since last night's trading. So it's phenomenal. It's the exact opposite of what happened in January. One of the other things, too, that's kind of interesting to watch is the amount of contracts that trades certainly reinforces the situation. And since 5 o'clock last night, there have been 1.3 million contracts of crude oil trade, just the April 2020 WTI contract alone. Each of those contracts is 1,000 barrels. So on paper, since 5 o'clock last night, we've traded 1.3, almost 1.4 billion barrels of oil. I mean, that if that doesn't emphasize the panic in the marketplace, nothing does.
Wow. All right. So a lot to unpack there, but let's start with this contretemps, if you will, this dust up between the Saudis and the Russians. So OPEC had wanted to keep oil prices stable. So they were limiting production, and they were holding prices, and they were getting their plus partners. That would be the Russians and some other smaller, presumably Central Asian or Eastern European countries, also oil producers, to keep their prices in line as well. But when the Saudis went pushed for one more cut here, the Russians basically said no. We've been cutting and cutting and watching the U.S., which is one thing you didn't mention, watching the U.S. continue to expand its production.
Correct.
And we're tired of cutting and watching them expand. They're making money, and it's costing us. And we can live with $41, $45 a barrel. So, no, we're not. In fact, we're going to increase our production. And the Saudis said, oh, Well, two can play that game. We produce the cheapest oil in the world. Watch this. And they basically open the floodgates. Am I mischaracterizing this?
No. That's exactly right, Russell. And you're definitely right. The U.S. situation, I mean, we produce 13 million barrels a day and we're exporting 3 million barrels a day. So, yes, we have been slowly but surely picking up pieces of the global market that they did give up as a result of their output curtailments. Exactly right.
So it's fair to say that the coronavirus was a concern. It was a factor. It was something that weighed on some of the decision making, but that the pieces were already in place for there to be a pretty major correction in the international oil market. True?
Yes. In other words, it's almost as if the U.S. oil producers have been sort of, sitting back every month, kind of looking around, going, okay, when are they going to do it? When are they going to do it? Meaning, when will the Saudis and the Russians decide enough's enough? We're not going to hold output at these current levels. So it's almost as if every month that went by, the U.S. oil industry is going, whew, good. They haven't changed their minds. They haven't changed their minds. They haven't changed their minds. And then all of a sudden, yes, this happened. And like I said, the thing that was so surprising was you went from not only are we not going to increase output to guess what? We're going back to the levels prior to the 1.5 million cut that we had all agreed to.
So more production and less consumption, less demand. I mean, even I understand the market forces there. That means prices go down, and they have gone down, as you mentioned, well, I guess right now, like 20%, some of them. But one that's holding and has not moved, interestingly, natural gas. And what's the outlier there?
Well, I think, years ago, it's been, I mean, Russell, it's probably been, gosh, I bet it's been 15 years since there was any correlation between the two of them, quite frankly. Natural gas, the thing about natural gas is it's on its back, and it's almost as if it can't go any further. We're at 10-year lows. I mean, right now at $1.72 Henry Hub, we're at 10-year lows. So it's almost as if the market has said, okay, we've kind of beat that puppy down. Well, the other thing, too, is, certainly, one of the things when people talk about natural gas, they forget that every single oil well has natural gas with it, what we call associated natural gas. So as we've increased our oil production, we've increased the amount of natural gas that comes from those wells as well. So one of the things that could potentially be going on is, in other words, you're at a 10-year low for natural gas, and those who are trading natural gas are looking for some kind of signal. Which way is it going to go? Well, today, if you're sitting there saying, oh, my gosh, we've had this dramatic drop in oil prices, that should equate to less oil production, which then as part of that will be less natural gas production.
And yet the prices remain stable, which means they're not expecting a huge drop off there.
Right.
Okay.
Right. But you do get, you get what we call the bottom feeders. I mean, you get people who are, we're at a 10-year low for natural gas. Gee, I probably should buy some now because who knows? We may not go any lower than where we currently are.
Interesting. All right. Well, I know that there's a lot of moving parts here, and I really appreciate you taking the time to explain some of this to us. Is this going to continue, in your opinion? Are we going to see the prices continue to plummet, or are we going to stabilize? I know if you had a crystal ball, you'd be a very, very rich man, but just kind of looking at the way things are moving today, it's going to be a rough week, or are we going to see things stabilize?
I think, unfortunately, I think we'll see things stabilize, but we're not going to like the price levels. I mean, I think we're going to be sitting in these 30s until we get some answers. In other words, number one, the whole situation with coronavirus is going to have to turn. We're going to have to truly believe that we've got a handle on it, and we're not going to see increased deaths and increased number of cases. And who knows how many months that could be out. The other thing is going to become is how long can the Saudis and Russia play this game without hurting themselves again? I mean, they hurt themselves in 14, when they started, again, opening the floodgates. And they paid the price, which is what led to the output curtailment. So how long can they continue to play this game? As you indicated, Russell, the Saudis, their production number is somewhere around $8 or $9 per barrel. So, yeah, they can kind of play that game. I mean, somebody said, oh, you know, playing a game of chicken. Well, it's not chicken when they do collide. I mean, this is like a semi taken on a Pinto. They've got $8, you know, per barrel cost of crude. Yes, they're making money at $36 a barrel for Brent. But how long can they withstand that? They have said time and time again they really need 80, believe it or not, to support their national budget. I mean, they have so many subsidies for their citizens, you know, that's really supposed to be their target. But, you know, cash flow is cash flow. And unfortunately, that's some of what we're going to see, too, is production, just because various oil and gas companies need to have some kind of cash flow. I don't know if you've looked at any of the oil and gas company stocks, but they're just getting beat up today, you know, pretty ridiculously. Now, from a wider perspective, you know, my bigger concern is this is devastating for the state of Oklahoma. I mean, I do hope people understand that. You know, if we were living in another state, we might say, oh, boy, lower gasoline prices. But this is devastating for the state. I mean, from a gross production standpoint, from an employment standpoint, you know, as I said, we're going to be looking back at the way things were between 2014 and 2016.
So I can't help but note that the OMES, I think it was, issued its numbers just last week, and, you know, GPT receipts were down. We're talking about the gross production taxes from oil. Which Oklahoma heavily relies on to fund our daily operations. So those were already down. Gas prices at the pump were in the $1.90 region, I noticed, over the last couple of days. Those are likely to go down. And like you said, that's good news for consumers at the pump, but it's not good news for our state economy.
No, not at all. And it's the entire spectrum. You're talking about oil, natural gas liquids, you know, refined products. So, yes, it's across the board there. And you and I have talked about this in the past. There's an equilibrium price at the pump that consumers feel good about, and it sustains the industry. But I don't know what that is. But, you know, it's out there somewhere. This is certainly not it. I mean, if you look at wholesale prices for April right now for gasoline, that would equate to a pump price of around $1.65. I'm not saying that, you know, anybody's going to drop their prices to pump overnight to $1.65. We should certainly see them drop this evening. But people should know when that happens, it's not a good thing when you're living in Oklahoma. I think it's going to be a few months before, you know, we wait this thing out and see if, in fact, you know, we're ever going to get back up again to higher price levels.
Tom Singh, a professor at the University of Tulsa and an expert on oil and gas production. Special thanks to KRMG's Russell Mills for the interview. This is Oklahoma Perspective for Cox Media Group. I'm Bert Williams.